Okay, everybody, welcome back to Computer Science E52. So today we're going to talk briefly about just some pointers on style, how exactly you can write your C code with good style. Just make sure that you're maintaining these good conventions and throughout the semester, just getting better and better at writing code, which is very clear, easy to read and modify for you, the coder, as well as anyone else who might be reading your code later. We'll also be talking a lot about pointers, how they're implemented in C, what their significance is, and really what it means to use a pointer and how they relate to arrays as we've been using them so far. And we're also going to be talking about dynamic memory allocation using the functions malloc and free. So to begin, let's just take a look at this file that I prepared ahead of time, style.txt. And we'll just take a look at a few things that I've done here. Obviously, this is not a proper C program. It's not a .c file. It's just a text file I've whipped up. I've placed everything within the context of a main function. It doesn't actually do anything significant that you should worry about, but just as examples of some things you'll want to look out for anytime you're writing code, just to maintain good style. So you notice here that I've written that it's important that code placed within any function or within any code block, actually, such as within a function like main or any other function you might write yourself, as well as within any type of loop or a conditional statement, say an if or else conditional statement containing some kind of code block in curly braces, or maybe just one statement, whether or not there are curly braces, for loops, while I do while loops. It's always important to indent your code to some degree. You see here we're using four spaces. I use four just because in Nano, tab is equivalent to four spaces. It's just a very simple convention. And Nano, I believe, automatically converts a tab character to four spaces, so it's just easy to use that way. The important thing is that you're consistent about what you're doing. I've seen some students who like to use two spaces as opposed to four. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but if you are using two spaces as opposed to four or four as opposed to two, just make sure you're being consistent. If you use two spaces at one point in your code, you should be using two spaces at all points in your code. That's just something that's very important. It makes your code much easier to read, and it makes it so that it's organized in a way that it's very simple to read. For example, when you look here, within our function, we have a loop, this for loop here, and this code is further indented. So just looking at it without even reading it, I can easily see where different code blocks belong, which group of statements are together. And just as someone coming to this code who has perhaps not been able to read it before, as your TFs who will be grading your assignments will be doing, it just makes it much easier to get a grasp of what's going on in your code and makes it simpler for them, as well as for you if you went back to edit it at some point. You'll see here that I've declared some integer value n and given it the value 7. This isn't really so much of a style point because it doesn't affect like the ability of me to read this code, but it does make things more confusing if I'm trying to understand this code. So I've declared this integer n equals 7, and that seems like a pretty standard name for a variable if we're coming from a mathematical background. We've dealt with variables with single letter names for most of our lives if we've taken any degree of algebra courses in high school or elsewhere. But in a programmatic sense, dealing with a language like C, which gives us the ability to give our variables more descriptive names, it seems kind of wasteful to use the letter n to represent it when we have an opportunity to use a longer, more descriptive name. So suppose this is just an arbitrary number, so I could call it int number. Obviously, you wouldn't want to call most of your integer values something like number because it's clear that it's a number. But just it's an example of how you can give it a more descriptive name, which just gives you more of a sense of what's going on in that value. Obviously, you wouldn't want to use things like number and character, but perhaps this was a better example, perhaps index, if I were to use it as an index value for some reason. So once again, indenting code within for loops or any other type of loop, any type of code block. You'll see here that in this particular example for the for loop, I've placed a curly brace directly below the for loop to begin it, and then with the same alignment below it to indicate that the code block is coming to an end, indented as much as the for loop, but not as much as the code block. This is just one convention, one we see in our examples in this class generally, but there is another convention that some people like to use, where they place their first curly brace at the beginning of their loop, right after this parenthetical statement, which initializes their for loop, and then they place the right curly brace somewhere else, usually right after the code block aligned with that. That's also fine. That's just a different type of style. The important thing, once again, is to ensure that you're abiding by whatever convention you're setting out for yourself and that you're consistent so that it doesn't become confusing for the reader. If I were to see both these for loops together in the same file, like we have in this example, it'd be a little harder to follow because I wouldn't always know what to expect when I'm seeing a code block contained within a loop. So these are just some basic points. These aren't things that have been huge issues in the problem sets as far as I can tell so far, but it's just something to really keep in your mind as we go forward, since in this course we do place such an emphasis on developing style and writing code. And later on, when we're dealing with more complex algorithms, a greater number of variables, more things going on in your programs, it's going to become more and more important that what you write is clear, easy to interpret and edit for you, the programmer. Okay, so now that we've touched on that for just a moment, we can go ahead and move into something a little more substantive this week. So we're going to be talking about the use of pointers in programming, and particularly in how to implement pointers in the C programming language. So does anyone have any idea like what a pointer is abstractly? What essentially does a pointer do? Okay, so in a standard data type that we might use in C, for example, an integer, maybe a character, a char, what we're essentially storing in memory is some value, some just abstract value like a 1, 2, 3, or 4, or an ASCII character like A, B, or C, or some other symbol like an ampersand. And this is just a value that's placed in memory, and we represent it with one of these data types. Now, the way pointers work and how they differ from these types of values is that they aren't so much meant to contain some useful value in the traditional sense of thinking of it, like a number or a letter, but what they contain is a memory address, which tells us where we can find another value, hence the name pointers. They essentially point to a memory address at which we can find something useful that we might want to use. Now, if you think back to when we were talking about passing data by value or by reference to a function, and as we've seen in the multiple examples David has shown us in lecture with us, the various versions of the swap function, you'll remember that ones that passed by value didn't really work because we were just manipulating those local variables, which were kept in the stack frame owned by the swap function. Just as a refresher, if you recall, we can represent our stack just using a rectangle like this. This topmost box, we'll say, represents the stack frame owned by main. So if we had two variables, x equals 1, y equals 2, in the main frame, and then we pass them to some function which got its own stack frame, a separate region of memory that has nothing to do with this region, we'd pass those local variables. We'd get a separate x equals 1, y equals 2, and if we were to swap them, for example, we'd only be changing the values of these local variables, and nothing would happen to these two variables. So does anyone have any idea how we might be able to resolve this using pointers? So you remember that if we pass an array to a function, we're essentially passing it. We're passing something by reference. We're telling due to the way in which arrays are stored in memory, when we give the function the name of an array, we're essentially passing it by reference. We're telling it where this array begins and how it can get access to all the values which are stored in the array, and that allows the function to access the original data and change those bits in memory so that when we go back and look at the original array, we see the changes that have been made by our function. So what pointers allow us to do is take these standard data types like int and char and pass these by reference much in the same way that we've been passing arrays by reference. So if I were to declare some integer pointer and point that towards a previously declared variable x or y and then give this pointer to a function, it seems like it should be able to use that pointer in such a way that it accesses the original value and can make changes to it. So let's take a look at a program that does something similar to that and walk through the steps which are involved in doing exactly that. So you see we have pointers.c, and essentially what's happening here is we're declaring a pointer. You'll notice that the beginning of the name of the pointer has an asterisk at the beginning of it. This isn't just some convention. It's absolutely necessary for it to be declared as a pointer. If you can actually declare this as int star space p or int space star p. And what this essentially indicates is that this variable is a pointer. It is of type int, so it's essentially saying, okay, this variable is going to store a 32-bit memory address, 32-bit being also the same size as an int. So you can essentially think of a pointer as an integer which represents a memory address. So this essentially says we're going to declare this variable. It's a pointer. It contains a memory address which points to something of value int. So why is it important that we keep track of the type of value we're pointing to? Can anyone think of why that would make any difference? I mean, we're still basically storing a memory address, so why should the computer care if it's pointing to an int or a char? What was that?
It'll affect how much space you need to reserve.
Okay, that makes sense. So we'll talk a little bit more about reserving space in memory, but you're definitely, later when we talk about dynamic memory allocation, but you're definitely on the right track. So when we dereference the pointer later and see what value it's being pointed to, you have to take into account that different types of values, for example, ints and chars, take up different space in memory. An int, for example, is 4 bytes long. It's 32 bits, 8 bits per byte, so you get 32 bits, 4 bytes. And a char only takes up 8 bits, or 1 byte. So when we take a look at what's contained in this pointer, it's important to know what type of value is stored there so we know how far to read ahead in memory and then return that value. So what happens here is that we're just declaring just a regular x variable. I haven't initialized anything, so it could be any value until this next line where I set it to equal the number 42. You'll notice these print statements, these are just for presentation. When we run the program, we'll see what's changing, so don't pay them any mind at this point. We're just looking at what's going on with the pointers. You'll see here that I'm referring to P, but when I declared it, I called it star P. So I mentioned that this is a syntactical thing to indicate that it's an int star type, essentially a pointer to an integer. So when I refer to this pointer again later in my code, I can just call it P. Its name isn't actually star P. The star is simply there to denote that I am creating a pointer. So anytime you actually refer to the pointer in your code and are assigning it an address, as I'm doing here, and I'll talk about that in just a moment, you can just refer to it as P. The star is not necessary here. So the ampersand here, this and symbol, represents an address operator. So what's essentially happening here is the computer is looking at that value x, saying, okay, so I've previously declared this variable x. In this case, we've given it the value 42 rather than 1 in this example. This was declared in the main function. We've given it the name x, and we look there, and when it has that ampersand there, it means give me the address of this variable. So rather than returning 42, this is located somewhere in memory. Generally, we write this out as a hexadecimal number just for convenience. So maybe the address might be 0x, which indicates that a hexadecimal number is following, which means it's in base 16, 0 through F, where F is a digit which represents the value 15. So just for simplicity, we'll say it's a very small address like 20. So what's essentially happening here is we're going to X, finding out where it's located in memory, in this case at 0x20, which would essentially be, if you do the conversion in your head, 16 to the 0, just like we do with binary, the first one, there's powers of 2. We can look at this as 16 to 0, and then 16 to the 1 times 2. So since this is essentially the 16's columns, we multiply 16 by 2 and get 32, so it's the 32nd byte. You don't have to trouble yourself too much with that right now, since it's just an abstract way of thinking about it, but essentially, we're looking at 0x20, that's our memory address, and that's what we're getting. So the pointer P contains that memory address at this point. So now that we have a pointer containing a memory address, what can we do with it? What seems like the logical thing to do with that pointer now? Supposing we wanted to be able to change x without actually saying x equals something else. We can't just type p equals something, because that would just change what the address is. If we use the assignment operator to p, it's just giving it a new address. So how could we maybe change the value that's stored at the address pointed to by p? The answer is by using this, the dereference operator. And this is just a very important thing to take note of. You'll notice that an asterisk is used here, which is unfortunately the same symbol that we use when we're declaring our int star type pointer. So what this means in this case is look at the memory address stored in P and give me the do something with the actual variable that's being pointed to, or the memory address that's being pointed to. So this is called the dereference operator. Now, if you think of a pointer as being like analogous to an actual address of maybe a home. The value there would be whatever home is there, whoever lives there, and the address would just be like the number on the street. Or perhaps a better example, if you think of the address or the reference as being like the pointer as being like a phone number, then the person you could reach by dialing that phone number would be the value stored there. So essentially, we're dereferencing this pointer, which tells us how to get to that variable, and getting the actual variable, which is located there. So star P is kind of like typing in X, because we're going to where P is telling us in memory, and then doing something with that location. So here I'm able to change X to 9001 by dereferencing P and setting that location to contain the number 9001. And just to demonstrate that this does in fact work, if we were to run pointers, we should see that before we do anything, X is 42. We point P to the variable X using the address operator and assigning ampersand X to P. We dereference P using star P and set the value to 9001. And then we can see here that star P, which is the dereference pointer, is 9001, and so is X. These two statements are equivalent because this is what P is pointing to. Does that kind of make sense to everyone, kind of what's going on there and essentially why it works? Another way of looking at this is something which we typically refer to as a box and arrow diagram. If we were to draw a box which represents the variable X in memory, this is just the region of memory where we're storing variable X. It has some address. It doesn't really matter what it is because we can just dereference our pointer which points to it or get the address by using the ampersand operator. We don't have to worry about the absolute number. But if we have this and we know it's called X because that's what we declared it, and we tell it we want it to be equal to 42, and then we declare a pointer, what's essentially happening is when we get the address of this, we're making it point directly to this value. And this kind of just is a more intuitive way of thinking about how pointers work. You think about assigning this arrow to a specific address, to a specific variable, and then when you dereference it, you're essentially following the arrow and then doing something with the location you arrive at. Yeah?
What's the difference between using pointers and assigning an element in an array of value? And then you can have an element 0 and then the value being 3. What's the difference?
So are you asking how arrays and pointers are related, or are you asking what's the difference? Pointers and arrays are very closely related, and that's actually the very next thing that I'm going to be talking about, so that's a good leading question. So essentially we can see here how when we dereference the pointer, we're essentially following this arrow and doing something with the location we arrive at. So it's just, that might be a helpful way of thinking about it. Are there any questions about how this works, essentially, just at the basic level, how it's implemented in C? Okay. So let's talk a little bit about something called pointer arithmetic. So essentially right now we have, maybe we have a pointer P, it points to an integer. So actually what if we were to take this pointer P and add 1 to it? So P is now equal to P plus 1. What do you suppose would happen? We know that P essentially contains an address, which is presumably represented by a number. So
it's referring to the next step in the array.
That's very perceptive, and that's actually what we will be talking about in just a second. But to removing that abstraction for just a moment, no, that's actually very good, and that's something that we will be talking about in just a second. But directly with the number of the address, what do you suppose is happening? Assuming that P is in fact an int star, so it points to an integer somewhere in memory. What do you think would be happening to that address? Would it be moving up by 1 byte or some other value? Okay, so due to the way pointer arithmetic works in C, what's essentially happening is when it sees P plus 1, it's not just adding 1 to the address, which would shift it by 1 byte, because that's not something that's really useful to us. Because if we have a 4-byte value located at P, and we increase by 1 byte, we're seeing the last three quarters of that value and then the first quarter of something else in memory. And it's just, it's really not very useful in any way that you'd likely be able to imagine. So what happens here is it looks at plus one, multiplies it by the size of the type of the pointer. So you can actually write this and see it's valid syntax. If you write size of and then a data type, size of int, for example, we know that an int is 4 bytes, so this would evaluate to 4. It's not a typical function. It's something that you can just write in syntax. The compiler will replace it with 4. You don't have to pound include anything. But this is just simple notation to get the size of a data type. And what's essentially happening is that that value is multiplied by 1, and we shift this address by 4 bytes. So we're essentially moving ahead to the next index, if you will, if we were to think of this in terms of an array, to the next valid point at which we could have another of that same type of data stored in memory. Pointers cannot really be added to each other. It doesn't really make sense to do such a thing. You'd get memory. If it were valid to do that, you wouldn't necessarily be able to guarantee anything about the memory addresses. You can't really do multiplication operations, division. It's mostly just adding and subtracting these numbers to access other data which is surrounding the pointer, and that's the way it's most useful. So, at this point, we have the tools available to use pointer arithmetic to access a piece of data stored somewhere specific in memory, as well as pieces of data of the same size adjacent to it in memory. So, as Judy pointed out, that seems a little familiar. It seems like something we've been talking about before. So, pointers allow us to indirectly reference something. It allows us to pass references to values to functions, and it allows us to store different values of the same type contiguously in memory. So that sounds like an implementation of an array in a way. So what if we were to use pointer arithmetic to implement something very similar to an array and look at it side by side with just a typical C array? What should we notice? So if I declare an array, squares 10, this of squares is an array of integers of size 10. It's just the squares of the numbers 0 through 9. And I treat squares just as a normal array, and I use this notation, squares, and then I place the index value, as you can see over there, to get a value and then print it out along with the index just so I know where I'm looking. And then I use this other notation, which is more like a pointer, treating squares like a pointer rather than like an array as we've been using before with that square bracket notation. I'm just saying, okay, I think squares represents the address at which this array begins, which is true. And I'm going to add to that whatever index value here. So for the 0th index, I'll add nothing. For the first index, I'll move over 1. So I'd be moving over 4 bytes, really, in memory. And then I'm going to take that address and I'm going to dereference it using this star operator. This is probably happening in code on the right here. And then print that out alongside it. Yeah. So if we were to run this, we can see here that either way we write it, we're ending up with the same values. So we're able to successfully access all these locations in memory stored in our array just by using pointer arithmetic. And the reason for this is essentially that arrays, as they're represented in C, are implemented as pointers. When you declare an array of size 10, what's happening is that you're getting a pointer to this contiguous span of data of size, whatever the size of your data type is, in this case an int, multiplied by the number of values which you determined, which you defined it as containing. And this is why you can't reach over the bounds of your array, because you've only reserved that much memory. And by using simple pointer arithmetic, we can reach to that exact position in memory by using the name of the array, which represents the address at which the array begins in memory, and then adding to it this value, which represents a multiplier, which we multiply by whatever the size of our data type is to access the element where it is in memory. So this is essentially taking the blinders off, taking the training wheels off, and revealing to you exactly the way arrays have been working in C. We've kind of been treating them as something distinct just for the first few weeks of the course, because dealing with pointers while learning syntax is a bit inconvenient. But as you can see here, arrays are implemented as pointers. You, of course, won't be expected to use this notation when dealing with your arrays. It doesn't really make sense to bring pointer arithmetic into the fold when you're just dealing with a simple array and have this valid C syntax available to you to use. This is how you should be defining your arrays, but this is just to give you a sense of what is actually going on and how arrays are stored in memory so that you can better acclimate to what's really going on and apply this knowledge to using pointers in other aspects of your programming. Okay.
Is there a context in which like a sort of pointer arithmetic would be like useful? Or?
There are, and the things we'll be getting to in future problem sets. In perhaps if you wanted to access memory that you knew was guaranteed to be located surrounding a certain piece of data, maybe perhaps in a struct, which we're just beginning to talk about in lecture, you might start seeing potential for using that in those particular ways. Okay, so, all right, knowing what we know now, let's take a look at this example. So, if we consider a situation in which we've declared the variables a to equal 3, b to equal 4, c to equal 5, and we have three pointers declared all with this asterisk leading in front of them, that's not part of their name, but just indicate that they are in fact pointers. And then we were to perform these operations, it stands to reason that the values would change after each operation. So let's take a look at each of these and see what happens as we do all of them, just as good practice and to get us better used to using pointers in the C language. So here we have A is being assigned to the value B times C. So what should A now be?
20.
Okay, so let's put the value 20 there. We know B and C should probably be the same, or 4 and 5. Pointer to A, it's currently the address of A. That makes sense. It's where it originally was. Pointer B, the address of B. And I'm just using the standard C notation with the ampersand representing the address of. And then pointer C points to C. And note that I do of course have to write in what the address is, because just because it's called PA, PB, or PC doesn't mean it's guaranteed to actually point to that value. There's no correlation between the name and what it actually points to other than that which we give it. So suppose I go to the next line and I have this syntax here, A times equals C. Is that syntax unfamiliar to anyone, by the way? Just because not everyone necessarily writes out their assignments like this. What's essentially happening here when we have times, like anything times equals anything, this is exactly equivalent to writing out A equals A times C. These are the same statement. So if you combine an operation with an assignment operator, that could be plus equals, for example, it would be A equals A plus C. So we're multiplying whatever A already is by what C is now. Just in case that syntax is unfamiliar to anyone, not everyone writes their assignments out that way. So if we're setting A equals A to A times C, what should we be getting? Okay, so we end up with A equals 100. So we place that in there. Nothing else changes. Just to save me the trouble of writing, I'll just write a line saying everything carries over the same way. So now we have B equals star PA. So what does star PA mean exactly? We're using our dereference operator there. The asterisk represents dereferencing this pointer.
It points to the location of A.
Okay. So the pointer points to the location of A, and when we dereference it, what does that give us? 100. Yeah, so when we use this asterisk, this dereference operator, we're getting the value that is pointed to by A. So we're assigning B to whatever is pointed to by this pointer, which happens to be A. So B is getting the value of A. So A continues to be 100. B is now also 100. And everything else presumably stays the same. Okay, so what about this next line? PC equals PA. So PC previously held address of C. PA now contains address of A. So what should happen here? Yeah. So essentially all that's happening is whatever we have in PA, which is the address at which C is located, or which A is located, I apologize, is now being placed in PC. So since PA points to A, PC also should point to A now. So address of A moves here. PA still has address of A, nothing changes there. Everything else remains the same too, of course. Now we have asterisk PB equals B times C. So we see here the asterisk being used in two different ways. So just keep in mind that it still represents multiplication even when we're dealing with pointers, and you just have to kind of keep track of what's being done. So what should be happening here? What is star B, first of all? Or star PB, rather? Yeah. So that's dereferencing PB, which points to B. So that brings us over to B. If we think of the box and arrow diagram, we go to our box, which represents point B. We know it's pointing to B. We dereference it. This takes us to the spot in memory which contains B, which currently we see is 100. But since we're assigning something to that, we're really looking at that box rather than the value. And we're setting that equal to B times C using assignment. So B, since it's pointed to by PB, should now be set equal to B, whatever it is now, times C. So 100 times 5, we end up with 500. And as before, other things are not changed. Okay, so two more lines. Now we're setting C equal to something, which is fairly simple. And we're sending it to asterisk PA multiplied by asterisk PC. So what should asterisk PA resolve to in this case? Remember that we changed the value of A. 100. Okay, so what's happening here is it's following the address of A to A, which right now contains 100. So you can think of this as just representing that value, 100. And we're multiplying that by dereference of PC. What does PC point to at this point? Yeah, so it points to 100. So 100 times 100, 100 squared, or 10,000, is being placed in C. So 10,000. Everything else, once again, staying the same. And just this one last example, we have star PC equals A times star PB. So I'm going through the line, what's happening here? So we're dereferencing PC, which at this point still points to A. Okay. And we're taking the value stored at A and multiplying it by a dereference of PB, which at this point pointing to, yeah, it's pointing to 500. So we take A, which is 100, multiply that by 500, since that's what B is pointing to in B, and we place that wherever PC is pointing to, which we agreed was A. So essentially, A times B, 100 times 500, is being stored in A. So we end up with 50,000. I apologize for my handwriting. I am using a mouse. Okay. So that should have just exercised some interesting portions of your brain that might not have been used to dealing with things like this, but it should have also given you maybe a slightly firmer grasp of what exactly is going on with pointers, what types of operations we can apply to them in C, and why they might be somewhat useful. Like we said before, this is particularly useful when trying to pass specific values in memory rather than just specific references to locations in memory. Like when we wanted to pass arrays by reference, we can now pass any arbitrary values by reference to our functions and do anything we want to them. We recall the swap function, which was written in a lecture by David. This used pointer variables so that we could reach for those specific areas of memory and then swap their values, essentially allowing us to access anywhere in memory and make changes to them despite the stack frame we might currently be in due to having made a function call. Okay, so that's great if we want to pass reference to a variable we've already declared on the stack to a different function. But what if we wanted to allocate memory off of the stack? You recall in lecture we've talked about different regions of memory. We aren't just limited to the stack. There's also something called the heap. Now, if you think of this as representing all the memory which is available to your program, you can think of the stack as being at the top or bottom. We'll use the top for now. So the stack, as it gets larger, you call more functions. It's growing downward. The heap is located on the opposite end of your memory. It's located on the bottom. I'll label these stack and heap. So if we were to just declare some variable, it would end up on the stack. This would continue growing downward as you add more local variables, as you make more function calls and have more variables being declared within them. Or you can allocate memory on the heap. Can anyone think of any reason you'd want to allocate memory on the heap rather than using the stack? Okay, so when you call a function and maybe you declare some variable in the function, and you call it x and it contains something, and then when you're done with the function, what happens to that value? Like when the function returns to main. So essentially what happens to the stack is that this function call and all the variables that were kept here within this region of the stack belong to that, they're just erased, they're overwritten, the computer doesn't really worry about keeping them around anymore, it'll do whatever it wants with that memory. So what if you wanted to allocate memory to be used in different portions of your program and you didn't want to have to worry about keeping out in specific parts of the stack frame, worrying about keeping track of it in your main function? Maybe you wanted to just allocate it and use it for something and not worry about where it is in the stack. So you can allocate that memory on the heap. So everything we've been talking about, however, declaring variables ends up putting something on the stack. So it seems like we need to do something a little different to be able to allocate just this different area of memory which we can access globally. So, what happens then is we have to start dealing with dynamic memory allocation. While we're running our program, we have to reach into the heap to get spans of memory, which are as large as we want them to be, find out where those are, and then use a pointer to access that and to do something with it so that all areas of our program can make use of this space and memory to store some data that we're using. So, what we use to do that is a program called malloc, which stands for memory allocation. So the way we use malloc is we just simply write it out as a function call. This function is located in the standard library stdlib.h. So if you wanted to use this, just pound include stdlib.h. You don't need to remember that. If you ever need to remember what a library of functions is located in, just go to your shell, type in man, and then the name of the function you want, and if you'll notice that it actually contains the name of the library that you need to use right there in the synopsis, and some other information about the function. But essentially the way you use malloc is you make a call to it, as you would any function. And what do you imagine you'd want to provide as an argument to malloc if you want to reserve a spot in memory to store values? What does malloc really need to know? It needs to know how many bytes exactly that you want to store. So say I wanted to store 10 integers somewhere in memory. How much space would I need? Okay, well, I'd need 10 times however many bytes an integer takes up. I know that happens to be 4, but if I just type in 40, it's kind of like, it's a little cryptic. I'm just allocating 40 bytes. 40 bytes of what? So you have a handy syntax tool, which we used briefly earlier, called size of. So what I can type here is, say, 10, the number of values I want to store, multiply by that by size of int. And now malloc is allocating this much memory for me, which happens to be 40 bytes, but I just need to... It's easier if I just write it out as 10 times the size of an integer. It's just conceptually a little easier to read. So now we're making this call, and we're reserving this memory, but what does that give us? So it's like, okay, so you've just allocated this memory, and now what? We still don't know where it is. We don't know how we're going to use it. Okay, so does anyone have any ideas what the return type of malloc might be? What it would give us back? Okay, You could think of it as an int, but what's its type as we describe it in C? Malloc actually returns a pointer to us. It tells us the address at which the beginning of the span of memory which we've reserved and is of size 10 times the size of an integer is located so that we can access it. So if I were to declare a pointer int star p, for example, a pointer to an integer, and then set p to a call to malloc, which reserves 40 bytes, 10 times the size of an integer, which is 4 bytes, 40 bytes total, p would now be pointing to this span of memory. So I could then use pointer arithmetic to assign different values to different parts of this memory that I had reserved for me by malloc. And we'll show a demonstration exactly how that works. I believe I've prepared a file for this. Okay. So you see here, we're just as we were on the board, we're taking an int star p, a pointer to an integer, and setting it equal to the pointer returned by malloc. Since malloc returns a pointer, we can just set it equal to the function call, which will evaluate to whatever it returns, which, as we just said, is a pointer to that these values in memory, this the beginning of this span of memory, which I have reserved using malloc in the heap. Very important, wherever you're using malloc, if malloc is unable to reserve a certain amount of memory for you, for example, you ask for too much, it's something that the computer just doesn't have enough memory to return to you, or for some other reason the function fails, it'll return the null pointer. And what the null pointer essentially is just the memory address value 0. And as we might have mentioned previously in the course, we don't actually use the memory address 0. It's reserved for a special purpose. And by pointing to it, we're essentially saying this pointer doesn't point to anything. And we're going to want to double check against that, because if we start trying to use that for some other purpose later, we're going to end up running into trouble, because it essentially means that something hasn't gone right in our memory allocation. We need to look out for it. So anytime you use malloc, just institute a sanity check here. Make sure you're checking. If it is equal to null, whatever you're trying to do, you're not going to be able to do it. So just quit out of your function and warn yourself that an error did occur. You were unable to allocate in the memory, just so that you don't start getting weird bugs later in your program in certain cases. Actually, let's see if we can make this happen, in fact. Suppose I wanted to allocate some ridiculous amount of memory. I'm not sure how much it'll actually let me allocate on this system, so I don't know if this will break it or not, but let's take a look. Unable to allocate memory. So I just asked for a ridiculous number of integer size spaces in memory to use for myself, and it was just too much. The system's unable to give that to me right now, so it didn't give it to me. And it caused malloc to return the pointer null, and we caught that using this bit of code and made sure we didn't run into more issues later in our code. So, suppose now I wanted to set the values 0 through 9, or 1 through 10 rather, and place them at index values. You can see I'm treating the pointer as an array. You can essentially use that notation interchangeably, pointers and arrays. Since it's just accessing the next index, which is after a 4-byte interval, so I can access different points in the memory which we've reserved, like we would with an array typically. And I can set that to a certain value. And what happens after that is that I'm using this other function called free, and I'm giving it as an argument the pointer to the data which I previously reserved using malloc. Does anyone have any idea what this might be doing or why I need to do it? I mean, it's right at the end of my program. It's not really doing anything substantive for me. It's not making my program behave any differently, and I'm just going to exit right after. So why is it at all useful? Okay, so the reason it's useful is because when you allocate memory from the heap, you always, always, always have to give it back, because the computer essentially is saying, okay, you need to use these 40 bytes to store your 10 integers. I'm going to grab this region of memory for you out of the heap. I'm going to mark it as being yours. I'm going to say nothing else can touch this, and I'm going to keep it around as long as you need it. And if anyone else tries to call for memory and it's already full because you have all these spaces that you're using already, I'm not going to overwrite them. I'm just going to not allocate memory, or I'm going to use some other solution. So if I were to leave this program without doing this, that memory is still allocated. and nothing else in the computer, no other process, can use the memory that was allocated for me. But I'm not doing anything with it anymore. And I'm sure all of us have had this experience. We're using some program for a long time on our computer. Maybe we're our computer's been on a while. We kept it on for a couple days, just haven't shut it down, haven't rebooted it. And we start to notice that things start to slow down. Nothing's really working as well as it did before. Maybe if you've had the Firefox browser open for a long time, you start to notice that it just kind of starts chugging along. You have to close out of it, restart it, maybe even restart your computer as a result of this. And what's happening there is a memory leak. Something in the program is allocating memory and never giving it back to the computer. And then whenever it needs to allocate more memory, it allocates more and doesn't give that back either. So what happens is that there's less memory available to the computer. It starts having to work around that. It's not able to allocate memory as effectively, and you get slowdown. So the only effective solution to this is freeing up the memory after you're done with it so that it can be given back to other processes. And it is essential for well-written code, which is using dynamic memory allocation. It's just anytime you use malloc or call a function that you know is using malloc, you have to once and only once free that. And like I pointed out, this is done by providing the free function, the pointer to the beginning of that memory. So it seems important that I keep that pointer having the same value. What if instead of iterating over this pointer like this, I had been doing something where for a while I was actually changing the pointer value to be one greater using pointer arithmetic and then taking whatever was there, so I'd end up with a different address in the pointer. What would happen if I tried to free that? Like, just to clarify what I'm saying, if I were to somehow... I got this pointer, and then later on, I change the value of the pointer. I make it like p equals p plus 1. I move over one index just because I want to do something with that. And then it came time to free this memory. What would happen? Does that seem right? Is that going to work? You can't necessarily predict exactly what's going to happen, but it's not what you want to happen. Since free is only going to work on memory which has been allocated by malloc, and this isn't the same pointer, this isn't the same region of memory, you're going to end up with some sort of problem. If you have a pointer to memory that's been dynamically allocated using malloc, you have to free that same pointer value. So if you need to change this for whatever way, make sure you're saving a copy so that you can later free that specific location in memory and get this memory back for the computer to use elsewhere. Otherwise, you'll have unpredictable behavior and your code won't work as well as it should. Okay. And if we were to run this program, we can see, hopefully, whoa, what happened there? Okay, you can see that I clearly did something a little less carefully than I should have at some point in this. But you can see, so this is exactly perhaps an unfortunate but teaching example of what can happen if you don't allocate your memory as carefully as you should have. You can get core dumps, you can get these weird errors, and if we were to try to figure out why exactly something like this is happening, we can use a program called Valgrind, and then type in the number of the name of the program which you're using. And it'll tell you exactly what might be happening. It says that we do have one allocation and one free. It says there are no leaks, but obviously something else is going wrong. So this is just I swear this is working. Huh?
It's like int p doesn't have a size.
Int p doesn't have a size? Oh, yeah. Very good catch. So if I were to change this to 10 times the size of the int, it'll now be reserving enough memory so that I can access that point. Very good catch, thank you. Okay, and now we do see that it is working correctly, and we're able to access these different index values within this span of memory, just as we would with an array, and place values there and then reference them. So it's an application of pointer arithmetic, which completely emulates the behavior of an array, because this is in fact how arrays are implemented, and it's also an example of how you may use pointer arithmetic and the dynamic memory allocation to get memory in the heap, which can be used elsewhere in your program, which will become more and more useful as we move through the semester. And just now that this is working properly, let's take one more look at Valgrind, just because it is a very helpful program. What essentially happens here is it analyzes your code and finds out if you're actually freeing all the memory that you're dynamically allocating. So if I were to run Valgrind on my program malloc, not the function malloc, I just happen to have named the program malloc as well because it's an example of that, then we'll see here that it says there's 13 errors from 6 contacts, so clearly I'm doing something that it doesn't quite approve of, but it also tells me that for one allocation, I have one free, I'm allocating exactly 40 bytes, all heap blocks were freed, and no leaks are possible. So this is what you want to strive for when you're writing, just to ensure that you're not having memory leaks, you're freeing all the memory, you're basically using malloc and free responsibly. And if you were to have any errors of that particular type where you weren't allocating things, you can run Valgrind with the dash V command, and this will give you a few more details. And you can just get a better sense of what might be happening if you care to pick through all this data and maybe look for something that could be going wrong. And just to give you a sense of what could be going wrong and something which is good to look for, if I were to take out this free command and just forget to free this memory that I've allocated and then make malloc again, it still works. There's no problem there. But if I run Valgrind on it, you'll see that I'm possibly losing 40 bytes in one block. I've allocated once, but I never freed it. So I'm leaking 40 bytes every time I run this program, which isn't really much, isn't much of a big deal considering the size, but if I'm allocating larger amounts of memory, perhaps to store an entire dictionary of words, then this can be very costly and cause the computer to really slow down over time. So does anyone have any questions about how malloc works, how to implement it, why it's important to free, and what that means? Okay. All right. Then that covers everything we wanted to go for. I'll see you all next week.